Hello, Debbie again on Wednesday, December 16th, 2015, beginning with the Decatur Herald and Review obituaries. Mowikwa Johnston, Marcella Eileen. Marcella Eileen Johnston, 93, went to her heavenly home at 8:52 p.m. on December 13th, 2015, surrounded by loved ones at Mowikwa Nursing and Rehabilitation Center in Mowikwa, Illinois. Site's funeral home, Mowikwa, has been trusted with the care and service arrangements. She will be remembered by her family and friends for her giving and selfless nature. She will be missed greatly. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. on Friday, December 18th, 2015, in Sites Funeral Home, Mowikwa. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 Thursday, December 17th, also in the funeral home. Burial will be in Westside Cemetery, Mowikwa. Memorials may be made to the First Baptist Church in Mowikwa or Mowikwa Ambulance Service. Decatur, Drake, Vivian Lou. Decatur, Vivian Lou N. Drake, 92, of Venice, Florida, in Decatur, Illinois, passed away peacefully Sunday, November 29th, 2015, at Pine Brook Care Center, Venice, Florida. The First United Methodist Church has held her membership for over 50 years. A memorial may be made to her name in a charity of your choice or to the American Cancer Society. Brettlender and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, are handling the arrangements. Decatur, Reed, Wilbur. Wilbur Reed, 96, of Decatur, passed away on Sunday, December 13th, 2015, in his home with his family by his side. Honoring Wilbur's wishes, cremation services will be provided by the Graceland Fairlawn Cremation Center. No services are planned at this time. The family of Wilbur Reed is being served by the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home in Decatur. Shelbyville, Johnson, Linda Sue. Linda Sue Johnson, 76, of Shelbyville, Illinois, passed away at 3:45 Monday, December 14th, in Decatur Memorial Hospital, surrounded by her loved ones. Private family graveside services will be held Thursday, December 17th, at Glenwood Cemetery, Shelbyville, with Tim Smith officiating. Memorials may be given to the Cancer Care Specialists of Central Illinois. Arrangements are by Howe and Yockey Funeral Home, Shelbyville, Illinois. And that is the end of the death notices for Wednesday, December 16th. Also on this page is a short headline and article, Showtime to Air Campaign Series, New York AP. Showtime announced Tuesday that it will air a weekly documentary series giving viewers a behind-the-scenes look at the 2016 presidential campaign. The Circus Inside the Greatest Political Show on Earth will premiere the week before the Iowa caucuses, which is scheduled for February 1st. Showtime has not yet determined its weekly airtime. Showtime is making it together with Bloomberg Politics and will be hosted by that company's Mark Halperin and John Heilman, along with campaign strategist Mark McKinnon. End of that article. An article differently headlined. One is called Kindergarten Coffees. The other is, it continues, Families of Holocaust Survivors Hold On to a Shared History. This is by Nita Lilleveld, Tribune News Service writer. After Mona Schaefer Edwards' mother died 5 years ago, nearly a decade after her father, she yearned for their accents, the rhythms of the Polish they spoke, the tastes and smells of the world she'd grown up in. It was a world that straddled Los Angeles and Europe, peopled by those with a shared history. Her parents had survived the Holocaust, as had their closest friends. We clung to each other, one of them, Myla Page, said. Most of us didn't have families, and so our friends became our family. And so it is family, Page welcomes into her Beverly Hills apartment. It is family for whom she set table with china and silver and laid out fancy cookies, chocolates, and cherry pie. She is hosting what she calls a kindergarten coffee for the children of the friends she's outlived, children who today are in their 60s. She is 95. The more or less monthly tradition started 5 years ago when Edwards reached out to Paige as a way to hold on. Thanks to her prodigious memory for names, dates, and the smallest details, Paige has held on to much of their collective past and parts of her own that she might wish to forget. She remembers her wartime job repairing German army uniforms, often covered in lice and blood. She remembers traveling in a cattle car to Auschwitz. She remembers the wonderful scent of Oskar Schindler, the man who saved her life when he would stride, tall and elegantly dressed, across his factory floor. She also remembers Edward, who's 64, as a baby sitting like a Buddha in his playpen. Come Edwards, her husband Barry, and her brother Martin Schaefer, 61, arrive at the kindergarten coffee bearing boxes of chocolate. "Come, sit," Paige offers them. Come eat some more. Her own daughter, Marie-necked, circles the table, pouring coffee. It's just after 2 p.m. on a weekday, a time when this younger generation would normally be occupied. Neck, 59, teaches senior fitness classes and plays tuba and euphonium in three bands. Edwards is a courtroom artist. Schaefer's a chairman and chief executive, Castle Rock Entertainment. Only one of the invited children, Joan Isaacs, hasn't made it, and it's only because she's traveling in China. "I'm busy, very busy," said Paige, smiling. "Doctors and doctors and doctors." Kindergarten coffees, however, are a timeout. No phone calls, no texting. At Paige's table, time is taken to admire the pie with its crisp, buttery crust and to travel from the present to taste memories of L.A. bakeries, sweet shops, and restaurants. Remember Alan Wirt's candies? Bit of Sweetland on 3rd Avenue? What was that thing they made with the hazelnuts? No, with almonds. "How about Saturday night," said Edwards, "when half of Beverly Hills could be found at Will Wright's ice cream parlor with its cheerful red and white awnings?" Beverly Hills was a lot different then. It was a small town, Schaefer said. Food memories lead to talk of the important moments they've shared. Before long, they're back at Beverly Hills Wiltshire Hotel, where Paige's son, Freddie, now 65, was bar mitzvahed. "He would have loved to have been here and seen everyone," Paige said. "He's a teacher, though, and couldn't make it." "Because this is kindergarten coffee, Fred is Freddie here, just as Joan is Joni. The childhood names, like the memories, have stuck." Mention of the Beverly Wiltshire chugs other memories of the years when Edwards and Schaefer's father was the hotel doctor, often called on to treat big-name guests. The two of them start laughing about when he asked, "Do you know Mike Jagger?" One time he said, "Do you know Steve and Katz?" And I said, "You mean Cat Stevens?" Schaefer said. Soon they're all talking Joseph Schaefer, the sun worshiper, lying on his cold water canyon pool and joking about how he should have been a cruise doctor. "I never saw my father without a tan," Martin Schaefer said. How did the Schaefers first meet the Pages? Paige, when Edward asks, recalls it perfectly. She and her husband Leopold, who died in 2001, were newly arrived in Los Angeles, and Poldek, as she called him, was sick. Their landlady sent him to see Joseph Schaefer. When Schaefer learned his patient was from Poland, he called his wife, who came to the office that night. The Pages had the Schaefers over for coffee. The Pages also were among a small group of Polish Holocaust survivors who around the same time started the 1939 Club, now called the 1939 Society, to take care of one another and their families. "People talk about the Holocaust much more since Schindler's List," Paige said. She and her husband appear as characters in the movie and in person at Schindler's grave at the end. It was Leopold Paige, born Pfefferberg, who would first tell the story that eventually led to Schindler's List when the writer Thomas Keneally wandered into the Pages' Beverly Hills leather goods shop in search of a briefcase. He was always trying to tell the story, trying to get anybody to write the story about his survival. He would try to get anybody to listen, Neck said. Some parents, said Paige, kept silent about their Holocaust experiences. "My mother didn't want to talk about it at all," Edwards said. "Nor is it a subject they dwell on here as their talk glides to new movies and new, more recollections of old L.A. "Whenever my parents would travel," Edward said, "I would always call Mila to hear that accent." "To hear my voice, yes," Paige said, "and you were already a grown-up then." "True, but I would always do that, and it was very nice," Edward said, reaching for Paige's hand. "It still is." End of the article. They do have pictures of the tea with the silver out and the good china and some pastries that you wish you could be there to share. Now it's the end. In business, Deadline draws near for certain seniors to withdraw from IRAs. This is the Tribune News Service. Pittsburgh, for senior citizens aged 70 and a half or older who have not yet taken the annual required minimum distribution from their IRAs, time is running out. If seniors unknowingly miss the December 31st deadline, it ends up costing them dearly in the form of a tax penalty that amounts to 50% of what they should have withdrawn. One of the largest financial service firms in the world, Fidelity Investments, based in Boston, reported that as of November 27th, the majority, nearly 60% of the company's more than $800,000, nearly 60% of the company's more than 800,000 IRA customers who are supposed to take required minimum distributions for the tax year 2014 had yet to take the full amount from their Fidelity IRAs. We watch the number weekly throughout the year, and we see it decline as it gets closer to the end of December, but we have concerns when we see a large number of customers who have taken nothing or have not finished taking their required distributions, said Maura Cassidy, Director of Retirement Products at Fidelity. That may not be a complete picture, of course. Some customers may be taking their required minimum distributions from other IRAs they own. They may be satisfying their requirement at their other IRA providers, and we would have no way of tracking that, Cassidy said. The required minimum distribution rule was put in place to make sure IRAs and 401k account owners pay their fair share taxes on retirement savings during their lifetime rather than hoarding the money, delaying taxation indefinitely, and leaving it to heirs. Owners of Roth IRAs do not have to make required withdrawals. They also owe no taxes on their withdrawals because all their contributions to the account had already been taxed and the interest is allowed to grow tax-free. The Internal Revenue Service has established a uniform lifetime table to determine what percentage of the account must be withdrawn at different ages. For instance, if the IRA account balance is $100,000 and the account owner is 70 with a birthday before June 30th, that person would need to withdraw at least $3,649.64. The IRS has another distribution table for beneficiaries of retirement funds and account owners who have much younger spouses. Alex Kindler, a partner of the Pittsburgh accounting firm Horowitz, Redoy, and Rotman, said that although in past years the firm has seen several clients forget to take their required minimum distribution, it is becoming less common. The plan administrators, particularly from the large brokerage houses, tend to be more proactive in reminding their customers, Kindler said. One recommendation we typically make to clients is they signed up for automatic withdrawal of the required minimum distribution from specific accounts. Still, there are a couple of other mistakes that people can make, he said. The rules are slightly different for traditional IRAs versus 401ks. For 401ks, investors must calculate the required minimum distribution for each account and make separate withdrawals from each. But investors can total all IRA account balances and take the required minimum distribution from one account. People get the rules confused, Kindler said. They think they can make one withdrawal from a 401k to satisfy the requirement, but end up falling short of the rules, making them subject to a very onerous 50% penalty. If an investor failed to make a required $5,000 minimum withdrawal, the IRS could levy a penalty of 50% or $2,500. After deducting another $750 for taxes at 15% tax rate, the investor who should have withdrawn $5,000 would be left with only $1,750 after sending a check for $3,250 to the federal government. The IRS often does allow some forgiveness, according to Cassidy. We find the most customers that they take out the amount they missed as soon as possible and apply to the IRS for an exception to the penalty. The IRS often waives the penalty, she said. End of that article. Another AP article in the Section D Life of the Herald and Review, online database designed to help animal shelters. This is by Sue Manning, AP, Los Angeles. Millions of dogs and cats end up in animal shelters or rescues every year, but there are no comprehensive statistics on how many, how they got there, if they were adopted, if a rescue saved them, or if their time ran out and they were euthanized. But a new website is aiming to remedy the lack of data. Animal welfare workers talked about creating a database for years. Now, 4 years after the work began, Shelter Animals Count, the national database project, is online. When enough information is input, we should have a sense how cats and dogs move in and out of these rescued shelters that are dedicated to their care, said Jody Little Bachman, board chair for the Shelter Animals Count. Data organization is modeled on the U.S. Census, so comparisons will be possible at the county level. Until now, individual agencies have used estimates when statistics were needed. As a result, figures often varied from group to group and state to state. Even the precise number of shelters and rescues is not known. The American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, often cited by the AP, estimates there are 13,600 shelters across the country taking in 7.6 million companion animals a year. Of those, 2.7 are euthanized, 2.7 are adopted, and 649,000 are returned to their owners, with the other 1.5 million including animals besides cats and dogs, feral animals, and other categories. For every dog or cat relinquished to a shelter by an owner, two strays were brought in, according to ASPCA estimates. Rescues are usually dedicated to saving one breed and can be operated out of a home, so they're even harder to count than shelters, which are often run by counties or cities. The new database at www.shelteranimalscount.org is incorporated as an independent nonprofit. Two employees will be hired, one to look at the data and one to recruit shelters and rescues to sign up. This database is precisely what the animal welfare world needs to guide good decision-making and help enable a greater understanding of the issues facing rescues and shelters in this country, Buckman said. The database is funded entirely through grants from board members. Board members include Animal Assistance Foundation, Animal Humane Society in Minnesota, the ASPCA, Association of Shelter Veterinarians, Best Friends Animal Society, Humane Society of Pikes Peak Region, the Humane Society of the U.S., Maddie's Fund, National Animal Care and Control Association, National Council on Pet Population, Petco Foundation, PetSmart Charities, Society of Animal Welfare Administrators, University of Florida College of Veterinary Medicine, University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine, and Wisconsin Humane Society. End of that article. One more article out of the Decatur Herald and Review. State and regional union to sue over right to work ordinance. This is Chicago AP. The AFL-CIO of Illinois will go to court over Chicago suburbs' new ordinance that would bar private employers from requiring workers to join unions or pay dues, setting up a challenge to a key aspect of Republican Governor Bruce Rauner's business-friendly agenda. The Lincolnshire Board approved the right-to-work measure Monday after listening to an hour of public comments. More than 100 people attended the meeting, including many wearing suits or jackets with union logos. The Arlington Heights Daily Herald reported. Others listened from the hallway in a second room set up for the occasion. With Democrats in control of the legislature, Rauner has encouraged municipalities to pass local right-to-work ordinances, part of his turnabout agenda, which includes efforts to curb the power of unions. Rauner's office said several dozen local governments have approved resolutions supporting his overall agenda, but union officials say they believe Lincolnshire is the first to actually enact a right-to-work ordinance. Labor leaders have warned that they would challenge any such measure. In March, Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan issued a ruling saying federal labor law only allows states and not local governments to enact such policies. The city of Lincolnshire was notified that the vote was illegal. They moved forward with adopting the ordinance anyway, so we'll move forward to take legal action, said Illinois AFL-CIO President Michael Kerrigan. Rauner spokesman Lance Trover declined to comment. Supporters of right-to-work legislation argue that it would help promote job growth. Opponents say it would weaken unions and depress wages. Roughly two dozen states have right-to-work laws, including Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Indiana, which all have Republican-led legislatures, too. Local governments in some unionized states, such as Kentucky, have tried that approach. Trustee Mara Grudzinak cast the lone dissenting vote at Monday's Lincoln meeting, saying the policy didn't fit Lincolnshire. Dan Servey, one of the five trustees who backed the ordinance, said he saw it as giving workers the right to choose. It was a tough vote for me. I think unions do a lot of good for a lot of people, he said, but I also have family members that weren't happy with their union and felt stuck. The four other trustees who backed the ordinance didn't respond to Tuesday's emails seeking comment. This is union busting, Chicago union organizer Ken Edwards said at the meeting, according to the Daily Herald. You, the trustees, are being used. Resident Sandy Salter accused the board of approving the plan to curry favor with the governor. But not all who attended spoke against the plan. Illinois Policy Institute Vice President Ted Dabrowski, whose group created a model ordinance for local governments, denied the measure targeted unions. It's about individual freedoms. It's also about the right not to join a union, he said. All right, that is the end of the Herald and Review. And we're now on the Decatur Tribune Online. News to know. Decatur, again, to be site of major drone exhibition for ag and non-ag uses. That'll be the 26th, 27th at the Decatur Conference Center. As the Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, finalizes its rules for using small, unmanned aerial vehicles, UAVs, agriculture and non-agricultural users of this emergency. I'm going to start over again. I apologize. As the Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, finalizes its rules for using small, unmanned aerial vehicles, UAVs, agricultural and non-agricultural users of this emerging technology are invited to attend the Midwest Drone Conference and Expo, January 26, 27, 2016, at the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel, Decatur. The event is a follow-up to the successful Precision Aerial Ag Show held at the Farm Progress Show site in Decatur in July of 2014. The conference general sponsor is ADM Crop Risk Services. The Midwest Drone Show will feature a full day of speakers, January 26, addressing issues that will help farmers and agricultural better use emerging UAV technology in their operation. Speakers will be from the FAA, agribusiness, and the UAV industry. On Wednesday, January 27, speakers from the FAA, engineering, construction, utilities, and real estate will focus on the use of UAV technology for facility and utility inspection, aerial photography, and emergency services. The expo portion of the event will feature UAV manufacturers, vendors of software and UAV accessories, as well as agricultural input and equipment suppliers. Many will be speaking in their own breakout sessions to better inform potential customers about their products and services. The Midwest Drone Show and Expo will be held at the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel on January 26 from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and on January 27 from 8 a.m. until noon. There is no charge to attend the Midwest Drone Conference and Expo for those who register online January 23rd. Online registration and details can be found at www.midwestdroneshow.com. After January 23rd and at the door, there will be a $20 registration fee. Lunch will be available on January 26th for $15 per person. All conference details, including pre-registration, speaker information, and complete schedule, can be found at the website www.midwestdroneshow.com. Check back frequently since the website will be updated as speakers and exhibitors are confirmed. News of the season, Harvest Christian Center Christmas program and candlelight service to be held December 20th. The Children's Church Handbell Choir will perform during the Christmas program at 10:30 a.m. on December 20th at Harvest Christian Center on Water Street in Decatur. Songs the children will do are Joy to the World and O Holy Night. In addition, they'll recite the poem Crispin's Symbols, written by Twyla J. Denham. There will not be an 8:45 a.m. service that day. A candlelight communion service will be held in the evening at 6 p.m. The public is invited to attend. There will not be an evening service on December 23rd or December 30th. Next article. No place like home for the holidays. Homeward Bound Pet Shelter wants to make the holiday season a little bright for our dog and cat, a little brighter for our dog and cat residents. HBPS is seeking loving homes that are willing to foster a shelter pet for the holiday season. Animals can be fostered from now until January 15th. No Place Like Home for the Holidays is a foster drive that saves lives of lost and abandoned pets and raises awareness about the importance of pet adoption. The program gives the dogs and cats a much-needed break from the stresses of shelter life. After fostering, the dogs and cats are healthier and happier, ready for their forever homes. If you decide to adopt your No Place Like Home for the holidays foster pet, the adoption fee will be half price. If you'd like to open your heart and home for the holidays, call 876-1266, 876-1266 for more information. Homeward Bound Pet Shelter is a no-kill pet facility and a job training program for people with disabilities. Its mission is to shelter and rehabilitate relinquished dogs, cats, puppies, and kittens until they can be permanently adopted into homes. Last year, Homeward Bound Pet Shelter placed over 400 pets in loving homes. They also employ over 30 people with disabilities in the training program. Homeward Bound Pet Shelter does not receive any government funding. Its revenues are solely dependent on adoption fees, donations, grants, and fundraising efforts. To learn more, visit them at their website, homewardboundpetshelter.com. End of that article. A quick spring announcement here. Zoo Buddies classes at Schofield Zoo. An all-new animal adventure awaits 3 to 5-year-olds during Schofield Zoo's new Zoo Buddies classes. Single-day classes are held on January 12th, hedgehogs, February 9th, playful penguins, and March 8th, sleepy sloths from 10 to 11 at the Schofield Zoo. I guess that's winter. That's not spring. Oh, well. Participants will enjoy short stories and hands-on activities to make connections with zoo animals. Children also get to take home their very own Zoo Buddy toy after each class. Fee is $15 or $12 with resident discount. Parents must be present. Call the zoo, 421-7435, 421-7435, or register online at www.decatur-parks.org. End of that article. Macon County Environmental Management Department to recycle Christmas lights. Strings of unwanted Christmas lights may be dropped off for recycling at the Macon County Environmental Management Department in the Macon County Office Building on Main Street, room 408, Decatur, between November 18th and January 22nd during regular business hours of 8:30 to 4:30 Monday through Friday. Residents are requested to remove all packaging from lights that are to be recycled. Another sustainable alternative is to contact local thrift stores regarding their policy of accepting working Christmas lights. All proceeds from the recycled lights will be donated to the American Red Cross of Central Illinois. If you have any questions or would like further information on recycling, contact the Macon County Environmental Management Department by calling 425-4505. End of that article. Okay, the last article we'll read is Police Department Needs Your Help to Find Grinch Who Stole Christmas Gifts for Areas Needing Children. The Decatur Police Department needs your help in solving this week's crime of the week. On November 11th, sometime between 9:30 p.m. and midnight, a burglary occurred at 888 West El Dorado Street in Decatur. The building that was burglarized was being used by the New Vision Church of God to provide gifts on Christmas to needy children in the area. The suspect stole a number of items, including costume jewelry, stuffed animals, and heat lamps used for cooking. The Decatur Police Department needs your help in solving this crime. If you have any information regarding this crime, please call Crime Stoppers at 423-TIPS. 423-TIPS. You do not have to give your name. Crime Stoppers will pay $500 or more for information that leads to the arrest on the crime of the week. This is the end of the Decatur Papers for Wednesday, December 16th, 2015. This is Debbie saying, talk to you again next week.